Kane is in the building.
Guys, you know how much we love Liberty shirts. Their flannels are unbelievable, and when we were job hunting, we wore Liberty shirts for our interviews and now to work every day. We thought Liberty was our secret until we started seeing their shirts on TV on Fox Sports every Saturday and Sunday. Now we know they are for real, but they are still our secret. Save 10% on your order when you enter the promo code 3PEAT at checkout.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of the 3PEAT podcast. This is season 4, episode 9. Once again, filling in for Steven Bonazzo, I'm TJ Hummel, behind the social media, the stats, and many different hats. And joining me is
Alex Castle
and Josh Romowitz.
Again, a lot of sports to cover this week, starting with some college football. Gentlemen, what happened to Penn State? Penn State suffered an absolutely brutal loss. Not only was it homecoming, but it ended up being a 9 overtime loss. Heartbreaking is an understatement. What do you guys got?
Jeez, you were going right for the kill early on.
I was hoping you would, like, soften the wound a bit, but no, just diving right in. And I like that. That's what we're all about.
We're going right in.
No sugarcoating here. But that was tough to watch. I think the biggest issue when it came to that game was Sean Clifford, the quarterback's health. He got hurt in the Iowa game, a rib injury, and he clearly was nowhere near 100%. I don't even think he was close to 75%, to be honest.
Yeah, you can kind of tell, like, every time he took a hit, every time he threw the ball.
When he was wincing, he didn't look like his true self. And, look, exactly. He is not the best college quarterback there is out there, and I'm not saying that. But he is one of the leaders. He's a 3-year captain of this team. So I just didn't see the determination and the same fight we always see out of him out there, which is why the offense was very sluggish in the game against Illinois. Frankly, it was a team they should have blown out. They're projected to win. They're, I think, 23-point favorites to going into that game, and to lose in overtime by 2 was pretty embarrassing. They have a really tough game this weekend. They're playing at Ohio State, number 3 team in the nation. Penn State dropped to number 20. It is very tough. And the only way they win that game is if Clifford is healthy.
Yeah, I was going to say, too, we can get into a little bit of the stats about that really heartbreaking loss. Penn State only totaled 18 points, 227 total yards of offense, 3.6 yards per play. That isn't the Penn State offense that we all know and love, is it?
Not at all. I mean, you look at that game, and I just don't really know what type of game plan Franklin was going for. Clearly, he didn't strategize enough around Clifford's health, because there was barely an air game. And it was just running the ball a lot. And we know that a lot of the offense from Penn State this season has come from the pass game. So it was just very frustrating to see that. And like you guys had elaborated on already, Clifford is not a standout college quarterback, but he's definitely solid enough where he can win these easy games. And I think it just came down to the coaching. I mean, Josh, you can correct me on this, but I don't think Dotson really did that much in that game.
And we know
he's the guy that they need to be game planning around.
I was going to add on to your point that even if your quarterback is not 100%, you still got to find a way to get your playmaker involved. Jahan Dotson is right now ranked the best wide receiver entering the NFL draft next next season. They had one really good play designed for him where he was basically triple teamed, and that was it. That was the only highlight from Jahan Dotson that game. He's one of the most explosive players in the country. And for him to not be targeted that much and be shut down by Illinois, I'm not going to say shut down because he wasn't targeted much, but to not be targeted against Illinois is ridiculous. No, just discrediting Illinois, you know, I kind of did already, but man, that was just, it was just tough.
What do we think about the outcome of this game coming up this weekend? You touched on it a little bit before, Fromowitz, but what do you think the game plan is for this team?
I think, look, Penn State does have a fighting chance. They have one of the best defenses in the nation. Joey Porter, Jaquan Brisker, they're studs in the secondary. Penn State could get to the quarterback. Their weakness right now, because they lost PJ Mustipher, is they're stopping the run game. But I do like Penn State's chances. They're 18.5 point underdogs, which is kind of ridiculous to me. But if Clifford is healthy, they get Dotson involved, which they will try to do because he's a star. He's not gonna be kept quiet in a big time game like this. The defense holds up because Ohio State is known for their offense and Penn State's known for their defense. That'll be a fun little chess match between the offense and the defense. I do like Penn State's chances, but we need to see Clifford be close to his normal self in order for Penn State to have a chance in putting up points and helping the defense out.
I think I agree with Josh. I definitely think it's a winnable game. Our defense has got to step up for sure. You know, Ohio State has a very explosive offense and they've got a really solid quarterback, but we need this win. You know, losing to a team like Illinois in a historic amount of overtimes is just, it's not something that this team wants to continue to linger. And I think a big win against Ohio State, that would really boost the team. I mean, we've dropped out of the top 10, so we definitely need this win to pick us back up. It's definitely possible. And I do think reevaluating and looking at last week's game and going into this week's game, I think Franklin will strategize a little bit better. Hopefully Clifford will be feeling a little healthier. But the offense at the end of the day has got to work around and strategize around Dotson. If they do that successfully, it's a very winnable game because I think the defense can do what it needs to do.
Castle, do you think an ugly loss like that could fuel them in practice all week and leading up into the big game Saturday, an even bigger game?
Absolutely. I mean, it was a very embarrassing win, and the community within Penn State is huge, and the fan base is huge, and I think the players know that they need to come up big for this fan base because the fans are going to come out and they're going to be even crazier about this game. So I think it's not just a moral victory for this team, but I think they want to win it for Penn State altogether. So yeah, I think this week in practice, they've been hitting the sleds hard. They've been strategizing a lot. I think they've been going full out with reps to prepare for this one.
And to your point, I think even more so for that this win, this potential win against Ohio State is for them because they've already dropped one game to Iowa, and that was a 3-4 matchup. Now you're talking about a possible another loss if they lose to Ohio State. There goes their chances at a Big Ten title. If they're in the mix, they need this game to stay relevant in that conversation because down the road they still have Michigan, they still have Michigan State. They drop these games, their chances are gone, and they'll be towards the middle to the bottom of the Big Ten just like that. So I think the loss on Saturday to Illinois is definitely fueling them, and like you said, their energy levels in practice is definitely ramped up a bit for anticipations for this game. So we'll see how it plays out.
With an offense that is averaging almost 27 points a game, I hope that offense shows up and can rebound for not only Penn State, but the community that is also surrounding Penn State football. All right, boys. We got some NHL action here. I just wanted to touch on a few surprising starts so far in the season. Most teams are up to about 7-8 games. And my first surprise is the Florida Panthers. They are the only undefeated team in the NHL right now. They have Selke Award winner from last season, Sasha Barkov, on their team. He's arguably a top five, top 10 center in the league. Fromwitz, I know you're more of a hockey guy than Castle is. Do you have any input?
I mean, they're just playing great team hockey. I know it's early on, and I really don't like getting carried away with saying, like, oh my god, like, what they have is special, or someone who's on the slumping end, their chances of making a deep playoff run is out the window. I'm not going to overreact like that, because it is only 7 games out of 82 played, but it's always nice to get off to a hot start. Florida Panthers are returning most of their guys from last year, so it really doesn't surprise me that they're out to this hot streak. Will it continue? I mean, we'll have to wait and see, but like you said, Sasha Barkov is one of the best centers in the league, and I really do like what I'm seeing out of him. He could potentially be playing for, I think it's the Calder, right? MVP?
I'd have to check on that, but
I know Norris is for defense. I believe Calder is, it's either rookie or MVP. I forgot.
Calder is, I believe, the rookie, but okay. Either way.
Either way, MVP title, because he puts up points, he gets his teammates involved, so I really do like him, like his chances. So we'll have to wait and see with what the Panthers do the rest of the season.
Yeah, I'm also like, I'm really liking what I'm seeing. I'm not gonna say that they're gonna be 82-0, but they are off to a hot start. It is early on, so this is only 7 games into the season. On the other end of that is the Montreal Canadiens, who were Stanley Cup finalists last year, and they are off to a 1-6 start.
Now, again, this really, like, I'm not as worried about this because I consider this like the playoff hangover. We're seeing this with the Lakers the past 2 years. Last year, the Lakers got off to a slow start in the NBA after winning the championship. Same thing this year. They're off to another slow start. The Canadiens lost in the Stanley Cup final to the Lightning last year. Is it concerning that they're off to a slow start? No. Will they pick it up at some point soon? Probably. I'm not going to say definitely yes, definitely no. I think give it like 5 to 7 more games, and then we'll be able to return to the subject, because that'll be another 2 weeks from now. We'll be able to see what adjustments they've made coaching-wise, lineup-wise. Then we'll be able to fully assess if it's panic mode or, look, it's just a slow start.
Right, right. And that's kind of what I was thinking, too. It also pays dividends that they're off to a slow start, because I am a Bruins fan, and the Canadiens are our biggest rival. I'm not concerned with them yet. They've gotten off the slow starts like this before. I'm sure they'll turn it around. They are missing Carey Price, but I think they, with their offense, with their defense, and their current goaltending, I think they have the guys to turn it around, and I hope they do. But again, it's early on in the season. This is just a little highlight for right now. We hope that next time we cover these teams, they'll be in a different story. All right, boys. It's one of my favorite times of year. Trade deadline's coming up for the NFL. Any of you boys got any zest?
Castle jumping right out of his seat, because I think Castle's got to start with this one.
I did notice that, and I love the enthusiasm, Castle.
Well, I'm enthusiastic because I've seen rumors about a guy that I've wanted traded from the Giants for a long time now, and I'm sure
David Gettleman is not eligible to be traded.
I know. Thanks for reminding me once again that unfortunately you can't trade a GM. I wish we could trade him. But in the meantime, we can trade some of the crappy picks that he's made, and that includes Mr. Butterfingers himself, Evan Engram. Saw some rumors about him getting traded to Cincinnati because it could be another weapon for Burrow, et cetera, et cetera. If we could get a decent draft pick in return, I'm not opposed to it. I am fortunate that we're not trading Jabril Peppers. There were rumors going around that he could be in the mix by the deadline, but he was recently moved to the IR, so that's very nice. He's protected for now. I don't know, TJ, you can elaborate on this, but I'm not opposed to trading away either Slayton or Shepard again for draft picks or maybe a lineman or maybe an edge rush. I don't know. I mean, from what we've seen from Tony while he's been healthy, I really think he's going to be a solid slot for our future. If the guy can stay healthy and not be too much of a problem off the field, I think he's going to have a better career than Shepard. So I wouldn't be opposed to trading either of them. I know I've said before that I want to keep Slayton because of how late in the draft we got him and how much talent he showed. But like you've mentioned before, TJ, he's injury prone. And I don't know how much longer I'm willing to hold on to him. So that's what I'm thinking in terms of Giants. And then in terms of trades in general with the deadline coming up, I was surprised to see Mark Ingram go back to the Saints. That kind of took me by surprise a little bit.
Then did you see that Alvin Kamara was the one who like endorsed that trade to happen?
He, like, Brandon Cook wasn't a fan.
Yeah, because they were, correct me if I'm wrong, but they
were. One of the best one-two punches.
Yeah.
And those two are the two, they have the most rushing touchdowns in Saints history.
And I think with a team right now that's struggling to score in the air, I think it's a great addition for the Saints. I think it's going to give Winston some breathing room and it'll give him a little more creativity with plays. So that was really cool to see. And then the one other trade with the deadline coming up, I haven't heard anything since, but I'm sure one of you will elaborate, and that's what's going on with Deshaun Watson. I know that they mentioned the Dolphins, that both sides are interested in going through with it, but I haven't heard anything else. I would like to see him go to the Dolphins. Josh, I know that'll hurt you, but I think him with Waddle, Gesicki, he would have some nice weapons there. So, and Parker too, and Devontae Parker too.
So if I'm not mistaken, I believe that they worked out a trade and it was agreed, but I think that Miami agreed on the conditions that he would be fully eligible and the charges would be cleared, which is making me think that this trade really won't happen just yet. Probably will take another year or two just to develop, because first, he hasn't even been cleared to play yet. Who knows if the league will suspend him? There's still no full court evidence, court cases going on yet. So there's still a lot to develop from this. So in the next 4 or 5 days until the deadline, will all this actually magically blow away and work out in Miami's favor? Most likely not. So I don't think he'll be a Dolphin come the trade deadline this year. But in the next year or two or so, will he? He might.
I was going to toss in here that the Dolphins are the only team that he has waived his no trade clause for. So
I believe they're the only team who's actually shown active interest.
Yeah. But it's he doesn't want to go anywhere else but Miami. And that brings in the question, is Miami going to move on from Tua? I don't know.
I know it's my division, and I've publicly gone about how I'm not a fan of Tua. But if you're looking for the quarterback of your future, you're just going after an older quarterback who has off-field issues. I think if you're Miami, you'd be really foolish to be making this trade. because not only will you be getting rid of your future in terms of picks wise, you're also going to be getting, I want to say, a liability at quarterback, because granted, you're going to be, if you get him with all of the issues, with everything resolved, if he's granted eligible to play again, who knows what else might be coming, because it seems like every day something new is coming out about this. I think Miami is better off just keeping Tua, because he's got a nice connection going with Jalen Waddle and Mike Gesicki, who you mentioned, Kassler, two young studs. Shout out Mike Gesicki out of Penn State.
We are, baby.
Had to throw that out there. I know, Steve, you're listening back home, shaking your head about that, but so you get for not joining us. And I think the Texans, they're just a lost cause right now. So Texans are in this mode where they need to get rid of Deshaun in order to improve their franchise. Miami's in the state of, we really don't know where we are, but I think they're better off just keeping Tua.
I was thinking so too, just because Houston is such a dumpster fire right now. And they've just, like, as an organization, they've just been dragged through the absolute ringer with all of this Deshaun Watson news and all that. But I have to agree with you. I don't think that the Dolphins should make this trade. Like, it's so silly. Like, you don't want to trade, as you mentioned, your possible future quarterback for somebody that has off-field issues, to put it lightly. As much as it would be cool to see Deshaun Watson play somewhere else, I think he's going to be stuck in Houston for a little while at least.
I mean, what it sounds like to me, Josh, from what you were saying earlier, and both of you could answer this too, but I'm just bringing it up with you specifically because you were saying you don't think he'll be a Dolphin at the deadline. At this point, do you just not see him playing at all this season?
Yeah, 100%. I think, because so far the Texans have ruled him out every single game of this year, which means the Texans have no interest in playing him until it's resolved. He has no interest in dressing until he's out of Houston. The league also hasn't ruled him eligible or ineligible to play. So at any point, once there's more full evidence and more things seen as clear, then the league could easily suspend him still. So I think it's safe to say that if he's not traded, that he'll be out the rest of the year.
I'd have to agree with you, Fromm. I don't see the Texans playing him at all this year, even if it gets resolved. It's just one of those things that he kind of did it to himself. And I guess even if it got cleared, it'd be a form of, I guess, punishment for what he's done, not playing an entire year of football.
Yeah, I was just going to say, even if his issues off the field were being separated from his issues with Houston, okay, then he could play. But like you guys said, the fact that he did the Texans dirty, they're just, you know, that relationship at this point is just tarnished. And that's what I think makes it difficult for him to play in that uniform again. I was just curious to see if you guys think that he plays if he gets traded. But another point that Josh made earlier, which makes me think otherwise, is, okay, he gets to Miami, then all of a sudden does all this legal stuff that he's been dealing with get tossed out? Which, no, I think it's going to follow him wherever he goes till it gets resolved. So I agree with you guys. I don't think he'll play. But my one more follow-up question I do have on this whole thing is, how much, you know, I mean, prior to all of this, Watson was a solid quarterback. I wouldn't say he was top five, maybe top five. I don't know. I was mixed about him, but he's easily a very talented guy. We saw what he did at Clemson. How much do you think that this season of not playing messes him up, you know, because he's going to pick everything where he left off
with a new team, a new system. I mean, does Watson's stock ultimately drop a lot with this absent season?
Definitely. But it's tough because as much as I want to say 100% yes, and then I have examples, Le'Veon Bell, when he held out from the Steelers, look at his production afterwards when he came to the Jets and now when he went to the Chiefs and then the Baltimore Ravens. He's just been bouncing around, hasn't been able to find a solid home and find production, like, because he's only 29, 30 years old still, which is crazy to think about. Seems like Le'Veon Bell has been in the league forever. Plus, he held out a year and didn't play. But then you look on the other hand, there are guys like Antonio Brown who also held out and then got his way. And look at how he's doing in Tampa Bay. So it's tough. The quarterback is the most important position. So it's really hard to tell if he's been staying in shape or not. Has he been working out on the side during all of this? If not, then there's no chance he'll ever get back to the elite level he was. But if he was working out this whole time, still going to see a trainer or something, then yeah, he might be able to crack the top 10 in the NFL in terms of quarterbacks.
I'd have to agree with you. I would hope that even if he's not participating with a team, he's still, as an athlete, going through his daily workout regimen, making sure he's in that top shape. It also reminds me of like Colin Kaepernick. Like he hasn't been on a team for how long now, and he still puts in the work day in, day out, waiting for a phone call. So I hope Deshaun has that same mentality, but in terms of taking care of himself overall, especially because all of this legal situation can really take a toll on you mentally. And I just hope that he's taking precautions in that and making sure his not only his body's okay, but like mentally he's all right as well. I don't know if you boys want to elaborate on that or not, but we can move to the next section.
Yeah, no, I'm good with that. I was just curious to see what you guys thought, because it's making me think, you know, again, he's a very big name and this is huge, and we've seen what it's been like in the past for athletes to bounce back after a year. So yeah, no, I think all we do is just follow up as like always, we follow up as the story continues to develop.
Yes, sir. Us over here at 3Pete, that's what we do best. Now let's hit some hardwood and talk some NBA basketball. Enes Kanter has been in the news a little bit recently. He's taken a stance against not only Nike, but against the Chinese slavery and specifically child slavery over in China. I haven't heard much else about it, but I know he has called out not only Michael Jordan, but LeBron as well, and Nike as a company. What do you guys think is going to happen with this?
I mean, I don't know if it'll get resolved by him just calling it out. I do think it is important that Enes Kanter is doing this, because he has a platform, he's got a following, he's an NBA player, all that. He's been wearing shoes every day, every game, with something to make people aware even more so of what is going on. So it is good for him to be pointing this out for people who may not have been aware. I personally wasn't aware until a few days ago. I'm sure you guys as well. So there's a lot of things that we don't really get to see. So for someone like Enes Kanter to be able to promote it and use his platform is very important for us to gain knowledge and do our own research about it.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with you, especially NBA players specifically using their platform. Like you, Josh, I had no idea about this until a couple days ago. I'm sure you as well, Castle, but I do like the fact that NBA players are not only using their platform, but using it correctly. We've seen a lot of cases in history, not to name any specifics, but when NBA athletes or athletes in general use their platform in negative ways. It's a very important issue, and I know I'm going to be doing some research into this cause and get more background knowledge. Castle, do you have anything to say about the situation?
Yeah, so first I just want to say that I agree with you guys. I think it's great for athletes to be using their platforms for issues like this. I think it shows that they're not just guys playing the sport to make money and show off the money. It shows that they're humans too, which I think is always a great thing to see with sports. The part about him calling out Michael Jordan and LeBron, did not know about that. And I have to say, I give the guy a lot of credit for doing it, because we know how vocal LeBron James has been with Black Lives Matter and stuff like that. And I'm not saying that he shouldn't be. Of course he should. It's a cause that he feels that he needs to be vocal about. And I think it's great. I think it's something that does need to be addressed. But the fact that he's vocal about that, and then you have issues like this going on, and he's silent when he has the power to spread awareness, and then you have Enes Kanter calling that out, I think that's huge. And I give Kanter a lot of props for doing it, because LeBron is LeBron. And I don't think people would be afraid to shun Kanter for calling him out like that, because I can definitely see people calling out Kanter for calling out LeBron, saying, how could you say this? He's LeBron. He's done this and this and this. So I think that's great that Kanter did that. And did he call out Michael Jordan for the same reason?
Yeah. So he posted an Instagram post, like a 3-minute video, where he was basically saying to LeBron, Michael Jordan, and the Nike president that you got to be more aware of what is going on in China. There's child labor going on directly Nike, and people need to be made aware of it. And he was willing to fly them to China so they could see with their own eyes, like, what is going on and how they are being treated. And there's not enough people who recognize that and are using their voices to talk about it here in America.
Yeah, and I think that's huge. And I think it was justifiable for him to call them out. And I think Kanter is going about it the right way. But the one question that I have to pose is, because we're all intelligent people here, we know that this has been going on for, I want to say, decades. Big companies using child labor in China, you know, Nike, Apple, they're all guilty of doing it one way or another. Why do you think Kanter is now coming out? You know, maybe this is just me looking into it too much, but my suspicion is that there's issues going on with Nike behind the scenes, and this is his way of retaliating, because why now bring it up? That's the one thing that I have. That's the one question I pose with this whole thing.
And I can't give you an answer, because I also don't know the answer to this. And I don't know if we'll be getting an answer about that anytime soon. It's a very good question. I know a lot of people, I'm sure, have been thinking that as well. I didn't really think about the angle you took about possibly having like contract issues. That could be it, but I would think that there would be something else or something more to spark it, because that seems a bit off. If you're having contract issues, then the way to retaliate, you'll come at them for what their company is doing. That part just shot, that doesn't really add up to me, but it could be, so I'm not counting it out.
I'd kind of have to give a similar answer here. It's just, it's a really good question, and I unfortunately don't have an answer for you either. In terms of maybe background issues with contracts and stuff, I'd have to agree with you, Josh, that it seems kind of far-fetched, but I'd have to say I don't believe that's the case. But I digress. As we always do here at 3-peat, we're going to give our starts and sits this week. Josh, why don't you kick it off this week?
I'm coming off a hot week again. I think this is like 2 or 3 weeks in a row where I'm riding a hot streak. I know last week I went 3 for 4. Great picks last week. The only thing I was off about was Leonard Fournette as a sit. You know, he balled out. Kind of foolish of me to sit him, but hey, got to be risky here. So my two starts this week. The first is Noah Fant against Washington, the Denver Broncos tight end. And for this reason, it's very similar to last week. I had Robert Tonyan, Green Bay Packers tight end, starting against Washington. Their defense gets to the quarterback. That is true. They get their sacks. Chase Young is a beast. But linebacker secondary is not that good compared to last year. They allow a lot of yards. They allow a lot of chunk plays. They allow a lot of points. And Noah Fant, unlike Tonyan, has been providing some offense every single week. So I think he is a very safe pick to start this week with the potential for him to break out because he hasn't had that huge breakout game yet. So it could very easily come this week against Washington. And then my other start, Gasol, you might want, and TJ, you might want to cover your ears for this one. It's Tony Pollard of America's football team, the Dallas Cowboys. I'm getting those looks already.
Go on, I'll rip into you in a little bit.
Which part? The America's team part?
Yeah, how dare you?
Tony Pollard has been a solid running back two for the Dallas Cowboys. And when you think of a running back, too, you don't really think of someone who you need to start. But Pollard has provided a spark for this offense, both in the pass and the run game. Really hasn't been relying on Zeke to be the beast that we were so used to him being. It's taken a lot of pressure off him. It's taken a lot of pressure off Dak Prescott and the rest of their offense when they could turn to multiple running backs to provide a spark at any point. So Tony Pollard this week is playing the Minnesota Vikings on Sunday Night Football. He is efficient on any down, first, second, third. He's a much better passing running back than Ezekiel Elliott is. And in a PPR league, which most standard leagues are, points per reception, Tony Pollard will rack up 4, 5, 6 catches a game. So I really do like him this week. Minnesota Vikings has been towards the bottom in terms of run defense, yards allowed, everything. So Noah Fant, Tony Pollard, two starts this week. Let's hear the backlash for starting someone on America's team.
Stop calling it America's team.
Yeah. You're giving them way too much credit here. Stop it.
Hey, don't. That's what they are referred to as. I didn't make this up. This is public knowledge.
Just a quick question for you, Josh. What are the colors of the flag? Of the American flag, what are the colors?
Red, white, and blue.
And who reps red, white, and blue?
Well, aside from the red part, the Dallas Cowboys.
TJ.
Okay, but you're saying the New England Patriots are America's team, and that's just not true.
Nah, you stumped me. I can't say.
Let's move on.
I was going to say you'd have to include here that there's Texas, and then there's the rest of the country, and Texas loves the Dallas Cowboys. The rest of the country doesn't, but I digress.
I'm going to bite my tongue and move on here.
Myself included. My starts this week. My first one may be an interesting one. They both may be interesting to you both. My first start is Devonta Smith against Detroit. He's coming off. He's got a slow start. He's coming off.
We're going from America's team to Philly. Jeez, this is a Giants fan's worst nightmare right now.
Hey, just you wait. Detroit is Detroit, and I don't have to go anywhere else with that statement. I think Devonta Smith can have a breakout game this year. He's going up against, again, that Detroit defense. They're not known for much. And I think this may be like his turnaround game. My second start this week, I think you may like this one, Castle. I'm going with Devontae Booker against the Kansas City Chiefs.
I don't hate it, especially after last week. I don't hate it.
I don't either, and here's why. The Chiefs have kind of been exposed this season as a fake. Patrick Mahomes is not on it this year. That defense is Swiss cheese. The offense can't protect them. And like we touched on last week, it's kind of code red for them. And Devontae Booker, he had a great game against the Panthers. And with a guy who's stepping into big shoes, filling in for Saquon Barkley, who isn't officially ruled out yet, but it's looking likely. I think Devontae Booker will have at least a touchdown or two, over 60, 70 yards. That'll do something. It may not be great, but if you're willing to put a little bit of a risk in your either your starting running backs or your flex this week, I'd put Devontae Booker.
I think they're both solid picks. I don't want Barkley to play. I know this might sound not good coming from a Giants fan, but let's be honest here.
We need him healthy.
We need him fully healthy. 100%. And with the way that the season's looking, I'm very content with Booker playing again. I'd rather Barkley come back fully healthy when we can fully utilize him instead of throwing him in with this broken puzzle piece of an offense. So, but now for my starts. I was a little off last week, I'll admit it. Waddle, I don't think, had a good week. Correct me if I'm wrong, Josh. He didn't have a good week.
No, he had a very good week.
Oh, he did have a good week.
He had 17 for me.
Okay, so then, yeah. So then I was good with that. And Carter, he had a good week too? All right, so I was 2 for 2. Beautiful. So it's a new week. Let's see if I could do it again. So the first guy that I'm suggesting you start is Falcons receiver Russell Gage. He's slowly starting to pick up his reps again. He had a touchdown last week, 6 catches for 67 yards, getting 16.7 points. They're going up against the Dolphins this week, I think. Or no, they're going up against who are they? No, it's not the Dolphins. They're playing another team with the same amount of wins. They're playing Carolina. So they're playing Carolina, who gave up 25 points to one of the worst offenses in the team in the league right now. So, the way that Matty Ice has been working with this offense, I think Gage should have another good game. So definitely start him at either number two or the flex. And the other guy I'm saying to start, someone who I'm personally starting, is Buffalo running back Zach Moss. He's going up against the Dolphins this week. Dolphins are 1-6. Bills are just a great offense. Moss is a really good – he's that really good second back to Singletary. He's good in the passing game. He could get good chunks of yards. I know I need him to go big this week, so definitely start him. And those are my two starts for this week.
Pretty solid, I'd have to say. I see Josh nodding his head, so I think he'd say the same.
Castle knows why I'm nodding my head about that Zach Moss pick.
Oh, does he now?
Yes, because I was in a little bit of a pickle. Oh, yes. Not yes. I know why. Because our wonderful co-host here traded me, Mr. Moss. And so far, he hasn't done what I thought, but he's been a solid addition. So I hope this is the big week, the big breakthrough week for my team. It's a big week this week in the league that I have them. So we need them to come up big.
All right. For a second there, I thought you guys were in cahoots behind my back, and you can't do that to the host with the most here.
Oh, no cahoots here. I can assure you. No collusion.
All right. Good. That's what we like to see. All right. Now let's move on to I think it's one of my favorite segments because just by like looking at each other's faces with shock and awe is who we decide to sit. Who are we sitting this week, Josh?
So if we're going bold, I might as well start. The first one, Najee Harris, Steelers running back, who's probably like a top five fantasy running back right now. And he's playing Cleveland this week. So Najee Harris has put up very good numbers, except for one game this year. And that was his first game against Buffalo. Every other game he's played this year has not been against great defenses. This is the first time since week one he's playing a top five run defense. Cleveland Browns, front line, linebackers, they're very good. Myles Garrett is playing at a ridiculous level right now. He is the favorite or one of the favorites to win Defensive Player of the Year. So I really like Cleveland's Browns defense shutting him down this week. Plus Big Ben is just, he's just a mess. That's the best way to put it. So I don't like the matchup for Najee Harris. So that's my first sit. And then my other, I believe someone just touched on this, and that's Myles Gaskin against Buffalo. Someone just, I think it was TJ. Did you say Buffalo's very good? Or is that Castle?
Nope.
That was me talking about starting Moss against Buffalo.
There you go. You're starting Moss against Miami.
Starting Moss against Miami. He is with Buffalo, yes.
There you go. And then I'm sitting Gaskin on Miami against Buffalo. Buffalo's defense is ridiculous. They're, like I just said, with Najee Harris, them, Cleveland, Rams. Those are the top three defenses, the run defenses. So Myles Gaskin also just isn't as good of a running back, and he hasn't been getting consistent touches. But I just don't think he'll. It's a favorable matchup at all. Maybe in the pass game, but that's a hard maybe. And that's also with Tua as quarterback, so we don't really know what he'll do. So Najee Harris, Myles Gaskin. Ride my bench this week, you two.
Very sounds soft.
Sounds to me like you're pretty happy to send them to the pine.
I am quite happy and quite content.
All right, Castle, do you wanna go next? Do you want me to go?
Sure, I can go.
All right.
My two sits this week. First one is the running back for the San Francisco 49ers, Mitchell. He is a solid running back. This not a dig at him. However, looking at San Francisco's matchup this week against the Bears, Bears have a good run defense. Shout out Stevie, complimenting the Bears. Yes, they have a good run defense. Their line is solid. So I can definitely see Mitchell being limited and Garoppolo going more in the air, hopefully to my guy Debo Samuel if he plays. That would be great. So, yeah, don't see a big week for Mitchell. So my recommendation is to sit him. And the other guy, not that big of a name, but because of the defensive matchup, I just had to go with this one, and that's Brandon Cooks with the Texans. They're playing the Rams, even though they're playing at home. We know how scary that Rams secondary is. Even if he's not matched up against Jalen Ramsey, Mills is going to have a very difficult time as a rookie playing against this defense. So sit Cooks. I don't expect too many people to be starting him consistently, but if he's filling in for someone this week and you happen to have another fill-in, I just sit him. And those are my two sits for this week.
Pretty spicy, pretty spicy. All right, last but not least, my first sit this week from, I think you'll like this one. My first sit this week is T. Higgins versus the New York Jets. As much as the Jets haven't had much to root for this year, like the other New York counterpart. Their corners have played very well. Josh, you can attest to this too. I think the Jets will lock up both T. Higgins and Tyler Boyd, even though Boyd is not my other sit. I was doing some research, and the two of them will most likely be shut down because it's a Joe Burrow, Ja'Marr Chase show. My second sit this week is someone who's coming off a career game. I'm sitting D'Ernest Johnson versus the Pittsburgh Steelers. I see by your face, it's bold, Josh, I know. But let me break it down a little bit. So in defensive stats, the Steelers aren't the highest ranked, but they're not the lowest. They're ranked 13th. In defense, they haven't allowed many rushing touchdowns. It's all been through the air. So their run defense has been pretty solid, I'd have to say. The secondary for Pittsburgh is something to be desired, but with D'Ernest Johnson coming off a career game, maybe he can prove me wrong, but going up against a pretty stout Steelers defensive front, I think he'll be in for an awakening. And those are my sits this week.
I like that. I like it. I can't complain about those two. Higgins, it always makes me smile when someone wants to sit someone against the Jets, because you got to have some sort of balls to do that. But the Jets defense, especially their corners, are probably the only bright spot right now for this team. So I like it. Pretty solid.
I was going to say, you've bragged about the corners all season long, so I knew you'd be happy with this one. All right. Boys, what an episode. That's all we have for this week's show. Before we wrap it up, quick shout out to Kevin from Wild Chat Sports. Great partner with us. They got some great content as always, from articles, podcasts, social media posts, you name it, they got it. Love the work they always do. So sauce them a follow at Wild Chat Sports. We have quite the episode lined up next week. It's probably one of our biggest. I don't know for sure, but I'd say it's up there. We have New York Knicks pregame show analyst on MSG Network, Alan Hahn, joining us next week, where we'll talk Knicks, we'll talk Nets, we'll talk New York sports, we'll talk all around sports. It'll be a blast. I don't want you guys to miss it. I know I'm excited. The boys are excited. It's going to be a great episode.
A great time to talk the Knicks right now, baby, and the Nets too. A lot's going on with them. So Alan's a great guest to have on, and we're all very excited. And like we keep saying, you guys keep listening and we'll keep lining those guests up. So stay tuned.
Yeah, as much as we enjoy sports, we also do it for our lovely listeners, and we can't thank you enough for tuning into every episode each week. It means the world to us, and we reciprocate with having fantastic episodes every week, as promised. With that being said, we can't wait for the next show. Sauce to follow on Instagram at 3P Podcast. Follow us on Anchor, Spotify, anywhere you can find podcasts, we're there. Thank you and have a great night.